Listen carefully now to the sound of a tech legend. It doesn't sound much like Bill Gates. He's William Kamkwamba from Malawi, who, using discarded junk he found, brought electricity to his village, an inspiration that began with a picture of a windmill in a book.
A windmill could pump water and generate electricity. Pump water meant irrigation, a defense against hunger. This is what I need to solve this problem.
Kamkwamba solved his problem with enough ingenuity to catch the attention of MIT and the world. But no matter how easy it is to fall in love with stories like his, the tech challenges for helping the rural and undeveloped world are far more complex and defy the familiar star system. Joining us now in our fourth and final installment of Meeting the Standard are two engineers and evangelists for technological change who know a thing or two about engineering for people who might not ever have the chance to see an engineer in action. Noha El-Ghobashi is the Director of Engineering for Global Development at ASME Standards, and Heather Fleming, who we heard from earlier, CEO of Catapult Design. Her company designs tools for disadvantaged communities.
I think one thing that we tend to do with our Western perspective is assume that even though these challenges are similar all across the globe, that you can apply a single solution that will fix, you know, every community or every country or every region.
That's exactly right. Communities are not monolithic, and I think the expectation is often that it's about the technology, but when you consider people's cultural norms or their values, the technology could work perfectly, but if the people don't aspire to use it or don't feel like maintaining it in the way that it's meant to be maintained, then it's not going to get adopted and it's not going to be successful.
You know, I used to see this all over the world. I travel, I use a wheelchair, and I'd go to places where there were all sorts of people with disabilities and wheelchairs that had been donated that had fallen into disrepair almost immediately and were completely junked. And the people really just thought that was a nice idea, but they had no relevance to the people. But as soon as somebody built a wheelchair out of components that were available there in the neighborhood, in the community, then all of a sudden an industry was born.
That's exactly right.
What are the needs in these places and way beyond wheelchairs here, Noha?
Yeah, I mean, the needs are, there's so many of them. You know, we're talking about basic needs of transportation, health in general. We're talking about access to clean water. We're talking about access to electricity so that you can work or study beyond the dark hours. But they're incredibly complex, and there isn't an infrastructure to support a lot of the solutions long term to make them sustainable. You noted things breaking down. Well, if you don't build the capacity of the community to be able to repair the technology once it's broken, and it's inevitable that it will break at some point, then it's going to be stored in a storage room somewhere and it'll become junk, as you've noted. We see this happening at the community level, at the household level, at the clinic level, where there's a lot of machines that are fairly complex that are donated and then end up in a storage room. The danger in that is that it creates a dependency model, and it really doesn't move the needle on economic prosperity.
So how do you build entrepreneurship within a cultural context that will allow it to be sustainable? Because we don't want to leave the impression that, well, what we're talking about here are people who just aren't sophisticated enough to operate the advanced, you know, tools that we use here in the industrialized world.
Part of it is thinking of the entire ecosystem of the solution even before you begin to design anything. And so embracing the local marketplace, and often we're dealing with informal economies, using parts that are readily available, as you've noted, so that when something does break, you can find the parts to repair it. Training and capacity building in that regard is very important. So being able to understand the behavior of the community and how they go about in their everyday lives. And then beyond that, how do you create business models that allow for entrepreneurship to flourish?
What's an example of an engineering solution that may have been inspired from something on the outside, but really took hold in a way that was consistent with the local sort of norms and approaches to technology?
One example that I can think of is the Embrace Incubator. That was an incubator that was developed by a group of Stanford University students. It costs much less than the traditional incubator, which is upwards of $20,000 to $40,000, and it's used to keep babies warm for 4 hours at a time using phase change materials. That one is a good example because the point of use is both at the clinic or at a home. You don't need to travel to a clinic to get to it. It's easy to maintain. It's easy to keep sterile. And it could be used on multiple babies in a particular village. But what's interesting about what they're trying to do is they're trying to look at alternative business models that allow them to not just donate incubators, but they have sort of a for-profit and a non-profit model that allows them to leverage the for-profit sort of commercial sense and then put some of the earnings of that into the nonprofit model. So innovation is not only happening on the technology level, it's also happening at the business model level and the economics level.
So you're director of engineering for global development at ASME,
yes.
Right? And so you have to think in a completely different way to have any sort of success in your little part of the world here, right?
That's exactly right.
And so how hard is it for engineers to be forced to think low tech?
Well, it's hard, but engineers are trained to think about innovating in new environments. I think what's even harder is to really get engineers to think outside of the technical boundary conditions and to really think about people as human beings, not to use them as research projects, for instance. And that's what makes us thinking about standards in this space so complex, is that for them to be successful requires that we have an infrastructure to support standards.
I mean, if you have a standard for clean water, Heather Fleming, and you go into an environment where what's acceptable is water that just doesn't kill people. It doesn't have to, you know, meet the same standard of what's coming out of the tap, you know, in some hotel in the Bay Area. How hard is it for engineers to get behind something like that where you're talking about acceptable clarity in the water so that it can reach the greatest number of people and coming up with a technology that can deliver that?
The worst thing you could possibly do as an engineer is deliver a solution that will fail in a year or two, that people think they're drinking clean and safe water, but it's actually not delivering just that for whatever reason, whether it be that it breaks and people don't know how to fix it, or whether it be that you've designed it in such a way that people aren't using it correctly and therefore still drinking dirty or unclean water, but thinking that their children are not getting sick from the water because they're using this device that was supposedly engineered to some sort of standards.
To solve those usability issues and to redeem some of these technologies, Noah, do you think it's a collaboration with the William Kamkwambas of the world, the local sort of individual standout star geniuses, or are they really out of the picture? Is it going to be something that's going to have to be completely grassroots and independent of whatever MIT degree programs are offered?
There's a general movement towards the idea of co-creation. All right, you don't create a solution without engaging the end users, the communities themselves. I think where we perhaps sometimes fall into a trap of is not talking to the right people within the community, and those may not be the stars. Those may be the ones that are either using the products more frequently, or they're the ones that hold the institutional knowledge, the women of the community that don't typically get sort of the status of being the leaders or the stars. The other approach, of course, is, yeah, it would be great if we have more William Kamkwambas, if we have more innovators coming out of the communities themselves. Is the likelihood that the product may be more successful if we were to have them develop these? Maybe, maybe not.
Heather and Noha, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Heather Fleming is the CEO of Catapult Design, a product strategy firm that designs tools for disadvantaged communities. Noha El-Ghoubashi is Director of Engineering for Global Development at ASME. So earlier this hour, we were reminded that embattled New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said he was honored to be considered as a possible candidate for president in 2016. What do you think? Jay, New York, when you create a climate where your staff thinks it's okay to engage in petty bullying by modeling that behavior yourself, something's really wrong. React to anything on the program, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or go to our facebook.com/thetakeaway page. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.